Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. We're going to continue our open lines just a little bit with your answer to the question, what was the top religion story of 2005? And then in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Linda Preuss here in Studio A, board member for NAMI, that's the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. We're going to talk about Christians and mental illness. They've got a conference coming up here. You are not alone. Very soon we'll tell you about that as well. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Thanks for holding on through the break. Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Southern California. He listens on the Internet. Bill, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hey, Happy New Year's. Two real quick things. The first thing is I think the big story of the year was the Pope, but the aspect of the story that I think is really the big story is the overwhelming response of not just Catholics, but everybody all over the world. And I really think the reason for that is that even though he said things that may not necessarily have been popular or politically correct or what have you, was that he spoke sincerely and with a real moral consistency. And I think that's a real good example for all Christians everywhere that, you know, that we should replicate that and really stand by our beliefs and don't equivocate and also be more consistent in the things that we believe.
I think that's good. That's an angle on that story that I don't think the press is necessarily going to pick up on. Thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate it. You know, we've talked with people before. Why was John Paul II popular not only with Roman Catholics, but sometimes more popular with non-Catholics than he was even with his own faithful? And I think it's going to take some time, perhaps a decade or two, for someone to reflect upon the pontificate of John Paul II, let some time pass after his death, to really answer the question of what explains his broad popularity with both Catholics and non-Catholics. And, of course, there's always going to be the contrast with his replacement, former Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict XVI. We're taking your answers to the question, what was the top religion story of 2005? Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Paul calls from New Melle. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Todd. Blessed Christmas, Tide, and New Year to you.
To you as well?
I think one story that's been forgotten is the former Chaplain Yee incident where military justice was turned upside down, even throwing out espionage, etc. He still was guilty of sexual misconduct, and there are one or two chaplains awaiting court-martial for the very same thing. Yee is also now being out of the military, speaking at places like Columbia Law School, where he is fast becoming the care poster boy for the Islamic world.
Just real quickly, with only about 30 seconds, just bring us up to date on the whole story of what was the initial story with Chaplain Yee?
He was originally arrested and charged with espionage. For instance, he had things on his computer, etc. All of that somehow was mysteriously dropped. The sexual charges, for instance, there was a female Navy lieutenant who claimed that he committed adultery with her. You know, this was all, you know, the affidavits were there. Now, these are, under Uniform Code of Military Justice, court-martial offenses. They made them non-court-martial offenses for Chaplain Yee and dropped them, saying, well, he's had enough. In the meantime, his family is still asking for apologies. And this impacts upon the ability of our chaplains to do their mission. Someone goes to a chaplain for counseling, and he says, well, if a chaplain can get away with it, why should I not get away with it? And unfortunately, our chaplains are gagged because being active-duty military chaplains, they can't speak out as, many citizens could.
Paul, thank you very much for the call. You know, I think that was a big story. Maybe it doesn't deserve the top rank in the top 10, maybe in the top 10. One that I was surprised not to find in the top 10, according to the Religion News Writers Association, top 10 religion stories of 2005. In fact, the subject wasn't even in the top 10. Anything having to do with Islam, period. I mean, it is the religion that is occupying, in one way or another, so much of the news and so many stories, big stories, small stories. Well, take, for instance, something related to that, Guantanamo Bay. We have a prison down there for enemy combatants. One of the biggest stories came out of Guantanamo Bay this last year. Remember the whole thing about supposedly guards flushing Qurans down the toilet or tearing pages out of the Quran or putting Qurans on the floor or not properly handling the Quran or handling the Quran? How long was that a story? A long time. I mean, it deserves a top, somewhere in the top 10 ranking, but there's no Islam in the religion stories. Now, I'm not proposing any kind of conspiracy. I'm just saying it seems to be a blind spot. Many of the biggest religion stories had to do with some of the trickier and more negative aspects of this growing world religion, and it's not in the top 10. Well, we'll see what 2006 holds. Again, my prediction is you can look for, what was the one I said that would rise? You can look for the intelligent design debate against Darwinism in 2006. That's my prediction. I don't like making predictions, but this one I think will be a bigger story and higher on the list next year than it was this year. And Terry Mattingly says, watch the Supreme Court. It could be the biggest in 2006. For the remainder of the hour, Linda Preuss is our guest here in Studio A. She's a board member for NAMI. That's the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Missouri. We're going to talk about Christians and mental illness. Linda, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's nice to be here.
Let's clear away one of the most common misconceptions, and we do this every time we talk, but I think it's so important, that Christians and mental illness are like oil and water. They cannot go together. Many Christians would say, if you really are a Christian, then mental illness is not something you should suffer from. That is, I think they wouldn't say it in these terms, but they might as well. That's an unbeliever's illness.
No, it's mental illness is a dysfunction of the brain, which is billions of cells and hundreds of neurotransmitters and different structures that have to all work correctly for us to function the way we should. And research is indicating that more and more.
What do you think is the biggest myth about mental illness?
That people with good Christian families don't have someone with behavioral problems. That if you have a behavioral problem in your family, you have somehow failed as a parent. And there's something wrong with the way you have brought up your children.
I mean, that sounds like, to put that in a nutshell, it sounds like if one of the kids turns out to have a behavioral problem or mental illness, blame the parents.
Right. Yes. I mean, we see that still even in some of the Christian counseling books, even that our own church produces, you'll see references to the person who has schizophrenia having trouble with their mother and still having to live at home, probably because of problems because of the mother. And that's really sad and unfortunate. We are in the process of trying to make people aware that these are serious medical conditions and that pastors and people who work in the church need to be able to recognize the symptoms of serious mental illness and refer people to competent medical care. And also refer them, it's actually a name change, National Alliance on Mental Illness. And that's because they have had so much success in educating families that people with mental illness are now very much participating in the organization and speaking out for themselves.
So a voice for the very set of conditions that this organization focuses on.
Yes.
A voice.
Right.
I want to talk about the isolation. A twofold, kind of two-faceted isolation that mental illness brings. First of all, the myth that mental illness can be isolated within a family and have and not really affect everyone. And then also the isolation that mental illness in a family, especially a Christian family, brings to that family. When someone says, okay, there's someone in our family who has got clinical depression or bipolar or schizophrenic, does that affect everyone in the family?
It does. It affects everyone. The research is indicating that things like schizophrenia do have a genetic component to them, so they will be passed down within a family. And when a person is seeing or having a delusion or hearing voices, it makes it very difficult for other people in that family to be aware of what is going on in the person's mind, and so communication becomes very difficult. It's why a family can also look very dysfunctional, because if a person thinks that people are saying, I hate you, when that's never coming out of their mouth, but their voices are telling them that, well, obviously it's going to be a pretty traumatic time in the family.
Talk about then also the isolation in Christian families that brings to the family. A family feels like they're on a lifeboat all by themselves with no one around them.
Well, in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, unfortunately, I think there is a tendency for families not to go to their pastor. Other churches can be different, where the pastor is the first person they will tell. So we have this situation in our church where a lot of our people are not coming forward to the pastor with serious problems and feeling very isolated in their faith. If they're going from an old model of blaming themselves, pretty soon they're going to be saying, well, something must be wrong with my faith, or maybe there is no God and I've been fooled all these years. So it's really important that our people understand these are medical conditions, recognize the symptoms, and refer people to proper help.
Why do you think it is, just to focus on something you said there, that among Lutherans, the first place, or among the first places, a family that has someone who's mentally ill, where they don't go is their pastor? Why do you think that's not among the first?
Well, I think, for one thing, they don't receive, I mean, we're just now starting to educate people in seminary about mental illness. And I mean, Dr. Hartung in Concordia Seminary here has made one class entirely on mental illness. I think pastors before that were working from the old family dysfunction model and taught that way. So, you know, in terms of our education, I don't think we have in truth kept up like we should have. 10 years ago, I would have said that I knew no one with a mental illness. In the meantime, I'm having trouble in my own family that is later revealed to be schizophrenia. And just the response to medication makes you realize what a wonderful thing God is doing today in giving us new medications to help bring people to clarity.
One of the things that that Christians are to varying degrees skeptical about is the whole issue of drug treatment for mental illness. Now, you attest to the fact that within your own family, remarkable results,
right,
given a proper drug regime. How would you dispel someone's skepticism about treating mental illness with drugs or drugs and other kinds of therapies?
Well, treating mental illness is both a science and an art. A good psychiatrist will be really working with the person and with the family and getting fine-tuning the medication. It does take some effort. The medication does sometimes have some unpleasant side effects. But the thing is that when you have a person who is hallucinating and hearing voices, and that medicine brings them back to clarity, there simply is no doubt in your mind that the neurotransmitters and the things in the brain are not working properly and the medicine is helping.
One of the biggest things surrounding, as someone kind of outside looking in, without any real, I mean, beyond knowing a number of people with clinical depression or bipolar,
mm-hmm,
as someone without any real firsthand experience of mental illness, it looks to me like a dark and scary thing.
Yes.
Frightening as a prospect. I've got kids who are getting into their adolescent years, and a lot of these mental illnesses don't onset until early adulthood or late teenage years. That's a fearful thing as a father.
Yes.
Also, just the saying to myself, what should I be looking for? Or should I be looking for something? What are the warning signs? Walk us through that, if you would, and respond to that initial response that so many have, and that is mental illness is scary.
Yes, it is scary. There's no question about that. I think that, you know, when people ask me about mental illness, I like to say that it's when the life at home becomes so completely disruptive and the behavior is just out of the ordinary. I mean, it just simply does not fit within the realm of normal teenage behavior. The reason these illnesses become so much more prevalent in late teen years is because that's when the brain is doing the final maturing. And some of the things that should be there are not there to make it function the way it should. And so it becomes, I mean, hypersexuality, you know, drug or alcohol abuse, threatening to commit suicide, cutting, just a complete personality change. I mean, eating too much or eating too little, not sleeping. People who don't sleep are at a great risk of developing a mental illness. It's critical to get good quality sleep. It's also critical to eat correctly because, you know, starving yourself or not eating the proper foods is not very healthy for your brain.
Is it a kind of a frog in the kettle experience where you're thinking at first, well, okay, we just assume we're all normal. And then as time goes by, you say, okay, this seems strange, but not out of the ordinary, until finally it becomes undeniable that the behavior, the reactions, the way of dealing with life is not just abnormal, but unhealthy.
Right. That's exactly right. I mean, there are some cases where there is a dramatic change, you know, right overnight, usually triggered by some great stress. But usually I think it is just a growing, just awareness that things aren't right. And for me, it was my children coming home who were in high school and learned the proper and correct symptoms of severe mental illness and realized that one of their brothers and sisters was going through that. And so just was able to get help. And that the help was life transforming. But it had to also include education of the family. If she had only worked with a doctor, the result would not nearly have been so good, which is why we're having this conference this Saturday. We are trying to educate people on what the symptoms of severe mental illness are and also let them meet some people who have gone through that dark, scary road and have, we like to say, pro-covered. They have gone forward to a new life that takes into account that they have a severe mental illness.
We're talking about Christians and mental illness. Linda Price is our guest. She's a board member for NAMI. It's the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Missouri. We'd be happy to take your phone calls, especially if you'd like to call in anonymously. Feel free to do so. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Kathy, who calls from St. Charles. Kathy, thank you for calling. Welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of questions. There's a member in our family that other family members have had a lot of concerns about over the years that we think displays some problems, mental illness problems. And then we've been told that, you know, that this person could be at best delusional. Someone else in our family is a neurologist and has mentioned that this particular family member could be he's a psychotic. I guess, can someone just be so selfish that they appear to be mentally ill, or is selfishness a symptom of severe mental illness?
That is a great question, Kathy. What she's asking about, it sounds, Linda, is that fuzzy, blurry area where you're saying to yourself, is this mental illness, or is this just bad behavior?
Yeah, no. I mean, it can appear to be quite selfish because the person is focused on themselves, but when they are psychotic, they are experiencing a reality that you and I do not experience, and it often is a terrifying reality. And so it's, I mean, you have to just realize that at that point they have to concentrate on themselves, and the family also should become as educated as they can, because there really are better techniques for dealing with people with severe mental illness. Like arguing, you know, doesn't make any difference at all because the person is not experiencing what you're experiencing. You aren't hearing bombs drop around, you know, you aren't having your hair fall out or some of these other things that they can go through.
It strikes me a very rough parallel is what happens when parents are aging and mom or dad begins to forget everything. And just the kind of basic senility that may set in. And I've watched the children of aging parents argue their mom or dad about something that happened or didn't happen, or how often they said something, or whether or not someone's taken their money.
Mm-hmm.
And as a pastor said, don't argue.
Right.
You're only going to confuse them more.
No,
and it doesn't really do any good.
Right. You need to become educated. That's we're trying to encourage people, if they can, to come to this seminar at Concordia Seminary this Saturday, because you can meet some people, again, who can be of some help to you.
Now, you understand, you mentioned the seminar, we'll talk a little bit more about the details on the other side of the break, that alone for many people is scary.
Right.
They think about going, and they don't even want to hear the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
The less I know, the better that is. What would you say to them?
I would probably have a homeless daughter if I hadn't become involved with NAMI. Instead, I have a daughter who's happily married just a year and so a half ago, and to a man who knows that she has schizophrenia, and that is because she manages a medical situation instead of us being ignorant and her being out on the street.
When we come back from this break, I want to talk about some of those warning signs to look for. Of course, they're going to be particular to each kind of mental illness. And I want to hear from you as well. We'd be happy to take your phone calls. If you want to call in anonymously, feel free to do so. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. A few minutes ago, we heard from Kathy in St. Charles. Do you know someone who is mentally ill? What questions, what comments do you have? Join the conversation. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You know, there is a, we've got to respond to this before our conversation ends. There is a whole school of thought among Christians that there is no such thing as mental illness. Either they deny it outright and say, well, it's just bad behavior, or they'll say, look, this is very obvious. It's something akin to demon possession. Well, I won't deny that demon possession can occur, or that could even occur along with something like mental illness. But is that the best solution? Is that the best approach to people who, with the help of medication, therapy, a supportive family, might actually be able to live a normal life even with mental illness? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Linda Preuss is a board member for NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness of Missouri. We're talking about Christians and mental illness for the last 25 minutes of Issues, Etc. Your phone calls as well, 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
People think of C.S. Lewis as the author of the Chronicles of Narnia, or the author of Mere Christianity, or Surprised by Grace, or any of his other books. But C.S. Lewis was an educator. What did C.S. Lewis, perhaps the most influential Christian apologist in the 20th century, have to say about his chosen vocation? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for January is called Irrigating Deserts, C.S. Lewis on Education. For more information about Irrigating Deserts, go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find the book on the homepage. Or you can order Irrigating Deserts for $22.99 from Concordia Publishing House. Call them toll-free, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. It's the Issues, Etc. book of the month for January, Irrigating Deserts.
AM 850 KFUO will present a special live broadcast this Sunday from the chapel at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. It will be an Epiphany celebration, and the broadcast begins at 3 p.m. An extraordinary collection of vocal and instrumental groups has been assembled for this special service. You're invited to attend or tune in for this Epiphany celebration this Sunday at 3 p.m. live on AM 850 KFUO.
Fossils, they can form quickly.
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the developers of the Future Creation Museum near Cincinnati, Ohio. Ken, surely all scientists know that fossilization can be done quickly, right?
You know, it's true that most scientists are aware that fossils can form quickly. But the reason I make such an issue of this, Mark, is because I found that the average person has gained the impression that fossils only form very slowly. It's what's taught in most public schools and the media anyway. At some of the conferences I speak at, I ask people to put their hands up if they've received the impression from what they've heard and read that fossils form slowly. And I usually find the majority of people in the audience raise their hands. I think the problem is that because they're indoctrinated to believe that the layers of fossils were laid down over millions of years, they think that the fossils themselves must have taken millions of years to form. That's why, during my lectures, I show people photos of such items as a fossil hat, a petrified ham, a fossilized water wheel, and so on. This helps people understand that given the right conditions, fossilization can be a quick process, taking only hours or days in certain instances. While none of this can prove the Bible's true, of course, it sure helps confirm the Bible's account of history about the flood a few thousand years ago, which laid down billions of fossils.
Do you have questions about dinosaurs and their fossils? Well, many of them will be answered on our website. Read Ken Ham's free booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs, at AnswersRadio.com.
Justification in the Scriptures, Old and New Challenges to the Doctrine by Which the Church Stands or Falls, and the Holy Spirit as Giver, Gift, and Gifts are the themes for the annual symposia at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. This year's symposia begins January 17th and ends January 20th. Now for a complete list of speakers, symposia schedule, or to register online, go to our website, issuesetc.org, or call area code 260-452-2247. The fellowship alone is worth the registration fee, and you can experience the Christ-centered, cross-focused worship life at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. It's the 2006 Symposia Series, January the 17th through the 20th at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne. For more information, issuesetc.org or call area code 260-452-2247.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. Here in the last 25 minutes, we continue our conversation with Linda Preuss, board member for NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness of Missouri. And we'll also take your phone calls, your questions, and your comments, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we go to these phone calls that are waiting for us, Linda, tell us about, you've mentioned it already a couple times, but the conference that's going to be held, is it this coming Saturday?
It's this coming Saturday. So if you are able to go, it's going to start, well, registration is around 8:30. We're going to start at 9 o'clock. It should be over by 2:30. It's $15. Lunch is included. We're going to have an overview of the five major mental illnesses. That's major depression, bipolar disorder, which used to be called manic depression, schizophrenia, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and panic anxiety disorder. Then we're going to hear some talks from some people who have been through mental illness, their dark days, their treatment, their coping strategies. We're going to have a psychiatrist who is going to speak to us about what to look for and answer questions, mental illness and the cross, and then we're going to discuss how the church can respond.
And that's coming up this Saturday to January the 7th on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton. Registration begins at 8:30, and it's only $15. That includes a meal throughout the day. And where is it going to be held on the campus?
Well, It may end up being Werner. We are actually getting enough people that we have to expand. We may have to go to a bigger room. We are asking people to phone in their registration so we know how many will be coming for lunch.
And the number that you can call is 314-505-7123. Very easy to remember, 314-505-7123. There's an email address as well. It is CE, that's the Continuing Education Department, CE@CSL.edu, CE@CSL.edu. The conference is called You Are Not Alone, Changing Attitudes About Mental Illness, this coming Saturday, beginning at 8:30 on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton. Let's go to the phones and talk with first with Lael, who calls from her car. Lael, welcome.
Hi. Hi, Todd. This is a good program. I have a 17-year-old who's developmentally delayed physically and emotionally, which affects his social skills. But he's PDD, which is pervasive developmental delay, and ADD. He has anxiety, and he has some. Now, I don't know if this is an irrational kind of a thought process, but he likes the snow, or he likes, you know, that kind of weather. And if the weatherman says, you know, it's going to be clear, there's not going to be any snow, then he gets mad at the weatherman. So I don't know if that's a symptom of something else, or so. Do you have any thoughts on that? And I can listen.
Lael, thank you very much.
Well, this is the right time for me to make my disclaimer that I am not a professional. I am not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, nor do I have, I'm a family member who has taken a lot of the National Alliance courses, which are free, 12-week family-to-family course. They have peer-to-peer, many excellent courses. So I'm not qualified to really give you, you know.
Would you advise, the phrase that's running through my head is, if you have a doubt about this,
right.
If you're concerned about this, then seek out the best professional help you can find. Is
right.
that good advice?
Yes, it is. And I would also say talk to whoever is around the child. School can be valuable for additional feedback on what is going on. Sometimes we're afraid to hear what the school has to say or other people, but it really is necessary information. Keep a log of some of the behaviors, because if there is, you know, one time is not a big deal, but if it continues, you know, that becomes a much greater concern.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk to this caller from St. Louis. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I'm calling. I've had mental problems for a long time, and I don't have insurance. And presently, I've been going to a clinic, and I'm lucky if I can get in every 4 months. See the doctor. They only see you, like, you know, on Mondays. They only take patients for mental, you know, problems. And they still, it's like, she says, well, I could be bipolar or major depression and anxiety and all that. Like I said, I've been like this for years, and they've tried different pills, and then if they don't work, you know, I have to wait. I'm not kidding you, two and a half months. And then I'll start drinking because I'm so depressed. And it's like, you know, I went in and I talked to her, and she says, well, you're going to have to handle that on your own and go to AA meetings, which I've tried that, but, you know, that really doesn't help. Maybe if you're getting psychiatric help, then that helps in addition. But, I mean, I'm just absolutely getting that they brush you off. If you have no insurance, can you suggest anywhere to go? I mean, I'm just very desperate.
Thank you very much for the call, and appreciate your situation, and thanks for bringing it to our attention. Linda.
There is the self-help center in Kirkwood that, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that is a building right next to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They also have classes. They're called peer-to-peer, and people with mental illness teach them, and you can gain support and strength from learning more about your situation. I'd encourage you to contact your local NAMI and see if you can't become involved with that. But you really have touched upon a huge problem, that the services are just abysmal, abysmal. I mean, right now we have a daughter who they are going to say shouldn't be on insurance because there's no diagnostic test for mental illness. That means at the moment we don't have a brain scan that can pinpoint mental illness. I believe that's coming, but we don't have that at the moment, and so they want to take her off insurance.
So the insurance companies are not very hospitable to the concerns of families with mental illness at this point.
Right. I mean, you know, all kinds of services are being pulled away. So this is NAMI does a lot of advocating at the state level trying to get services. And I would encourage you to call their hotline because they're more aware of things that are available.
Do you know the number for the hotline?
I do. If you're here in St. Louis, it is 966-4670. That's a 314 number.
So it's 314-966-4670. Thank you very much. We had another listener who couldn't stay on the line calling, asking the question, do you know of any Lutheran-based respite cares for the parents of mentally ill children?
I don't. I know that it's very needed, but I don't know of. I mean, we are trying at the International Center of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to be more of a presence in this area, including, you know, hopefully some housing and things like that off in the distance. But I would encourage you to be part of, you know, that effort. If you can come to this conference and make your voice known, that would be wonderful.
We're talking with Linda Preuss about Christians and mental illness. She's a board member for NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness of Missouri. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you want to call in anonymously, we'll take your call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We are back live this Tuesday, January the 3rd, and we've got about 15 minutes left with Linda Preuss. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Can we talk about some of the warning signs? I know that the five major mental illnesses, the most common ones, all present in a different way. But if you could talk from your own experience in a kind of a general way about the warning signs for schizophrenia. I think that's the one that people fear the most because it is the one that seems most bizarre. And it is also, I think, the one that, if untreated, is also tends to be fatal for more people.
Well, I think in all the mental illnesses, we have to realize there is they can be terminal, mm-hmm. and terminal in that people commit suicide. About 10% of the people with a mental illness will end up committing suicide. So that's suicide is one of the things to always take very seriously. But most people have a misimpression of what schizophrenia is. It is not a split personality. You are not Harry one day and Joe the next. What happens is that the person has both positive and negative symptoms. The positive symptoms we're more familiar with. They can be the person will hear voices. The voices can be very real to them. They really, have no idea that they're not actually hearing something. They also have delusions. For instance, they think that they can hear other people's thoughts, or that aliens from outer space are communicating with them, or that everybody hears their thoughts. I mean, there are specific delusions which are that are pretty common.
One I've noted, and this is just from a radio perspective, believing with all their heart that someone on the radio or the television is directly communicating to them.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is. And the negative symptoms are things that are taken away from the person. A lot of times they become very withdrawn because they're concentrating on what is going on in their head and trying to sort it out. So they can they lose their spontaneity. Their emotions are quite flat. They lose their ability to experience joy and happiness because they are so concerned with what's going on in their head. Sometimes they have catatonic behavior where they'll do repetitive motions over and over again, trying to calm themselves down. Part of it is for the person, it's very difficult to really understand that the person is talking about things that aren't really happening. And they can fool a lot of people. If you weren't there and witnessing the experience, then a lot of times other people are drawn into their delusions, like Beautiful Mind, the movie, indicated.
That's one of the things that has struck me in dealing with the few that I have who are schizophrenic, and that is the caution that you have to exercise, say, as as a pastor or someone who's trying to help with not playing into the delusions and not feeding into that.
Right. Well, and one thing I want to comment on is that we're trying to get away from the, you know, labeling people as schizophrenic, because that does not define their whole life. I mean, a person today with the illness of schizophrenia has, it's like a person with diabetes. It's part of their life, but when it is under control, they have many rich and rewarding things that are going on in their life in addition to their medical situation. But yes, we try to encourage people to empathize, that if a person is having a delusion, you can empathize that they would be afraid if they thought that police were out to get them or somebody was out to hurt them. But you can quietly and calmly reassure them that those things are not occurring. So it's not an argument. It's trying to empathize with the fear or the underlying emotion that the person is feeling, and then gently discounting what is going on and trying to give them some assurance that they're okay.
I wonder about this. You've mentioned several times that the person who is suffering from, say, an auditory hallucination or a delusion is unaware that these things aren't happening.
Right.
Can they reach a point where they say, I know it's not happening. It still troubles me, but I know it's not real.
Right. A lot of times a person will continue to have delusions even on medication, but they do learn to cognitively overcome that. And one way they do that, for instance, if their delusion is that people hear their thoughts, they learn to look at a person's face, and when the person's face doesn't change, then they realize that they haven't heard them say, Todd, you look so silly today. Why are you wearing those clothes? You know, if they don't get angry. And so they do cognitively learn about their situation, and they learn to deal with it that way.
Have you ever asked yourself, as a parent of a child with mental illness, asked God, why? Why me? Why my child?
Well, for me, this was a tremendous crisis of faith before it was diagnosed, because, I mean, ours is a very good and loving family with family devotions, going to church, I mean, good discipline, I think the proper amount of love. Why do we have this chaotic behavior where at times you can't even get through dinner without an outburst? So when we received a diagnosis, it was tremendously healing and a relief, because that was something that we could cope with. But before that, I was very hard-pressed. I mean, a lot of tears before God, you know, in just what was happening and, you know, what did I do wrong, and please forgive me. And eventually, I didn't care who blamed me. I knew I needed help, and that's when, thank goodness, in a hospital, people recognized the symptoms of schizophrenia and got help.
Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. 10 more minutes with Linda Preuss. Do you have a question or a comment on mental illness? Now's the time to call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We also have an in-studio email address. It's issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And if you want to call in anonymously, we'll still take your call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What you just described there, Linda, sounds like, if I had to put a word to it, is a feeling of helplessness.
Right. Definitely.
When that diagnosis comes, beyond just being able to put a name to what's happening, I mean, that doesn't help a lot, just to put a name
right.
to it. What is the relief of knowing, okay, now we know what's wrong? Not only do we have a name for it, but now we know what it is.
Well, yeah, it's a beginning. And I need to emphasize that it's just the beginning of what is a long road. The family really needs to become educated about what that means, because this is a situation where when a person has doesn't function in reality the way they should, they really do need outside help to help guide them with taking their medications, with educating them on what the situation is when they don't take them, teaching them about the side effects. We always, in our family, treat the person very respectfully. They are dealing with a difficult situation that's just as difficult as if it was cancer or if it was diabetes or anything else. This is why we have agreed in our family to talk openly about our situation. We know there are people out there suffering and there is help available and that we need to get rid of the stigma and the shame.
How difficult was that a decision to make to discuss it publicly? And was that a problem for the member of your family who does suffer from mental illness?
Well, it's been a process. The diagnosis was 8 years ago. And my first step was I became a teacher of family to family and felt that I had to ask my family member, all of them actually, because it could be any one of them. I have five children. And got permission, and my husband too. This impacts him. These are our children, and so each step along the way, I continue to ask for their permission, because at this point, you know, someone is probably going to come someday to my daughter and tell her, "Oh, I hear you have schizophrenia," and is she going to be okay with that? So it was hard for me. I've spoken far more in the ELCA than I have in my own church body, and part of that was I'm a little bit more anonymous there, you know, so it's been difficult to continue to do this, but I'll tell you, it burns up within me because wherever I go, people speak to me, and sometimes I'm the first person they've ever confided in that they have a family member with a severe mental illness, some of them institutionalized, and they have not even told their husband or their children. I mean, they're older people, and so this is just, this is real sad. And we have to overcome this.
You mentioned before that a decade ago, you would have honestly said, as far as you knew, you didn't know anyone with a mental illness.
Right.
How much of that was ignorance? How much of it was denial?
Oh, I think it was ignorance. And I have to say that I think there's a lot of ignorance out there. I really believe that we don't understand, you know, the symptoms of mental illness. And so, and I think the pastors, too, we have a lot of good pastors in our congregations. They just, you know, they're ignorant, you know, and that's not a sin, but we're trying to educate them because part of this is to get the burden off of their lap because somebody with mental illness can be pretty disruptive. And so if you can, in a loving way, suggest that and point them to good help. I mean, psychiatrists deal with medicine. You know, most of us don't go to have our appendix out and question the Christian faith, you know. I know good Muslim doctors. I know a good Jewish doctor. I know good Christian doctors. And obviously it's, you know, you prefer, it'd be wonderful, but I don't see it as an absolute criteria when they're dealing with the medical part. Now, when you're getting counseling or psychology, then that's a different matter. You know, you're going to want to look for somebody who does share your values.
How do you think we're supplied in terms of counselors, people who can continue to help with kind of the day-to-day family matters that mental illness brings in the Christian community?
Well, see, I am a huge advocate for people getting educated through the National Alliance on Mental Illness, that's NAMI. And they are a secular organization, okay? They teach you the medical part. So that leaves the spiritual component. You know, I'm trying to work with our pastors because people really do need to understand, you know, why this is, you know, a big question when people are trying to serve God and be faithful and suddenly they end up with a severe mental illness that is affecting the way they think. They are asking, why God? And, you know, for me, I understood the medical component, but to be the person who is, you know, suffering with that. There's huge spiritual questions that our pastors should be prepared to answer.
Martin Luther taught an awful lot about the theology of the cross, mm-hmm. That all human suffering, in the end, ought to be seen through the suffering of Jesus Christ for us at the cross, and that sometimes the only answer we have to the why of suffering is what Christ suffered for us, and to know that in spite of how things appear, the sure sign, the undeniable sign of God's love for us in the midst of suffering is the suffering of his own son for our sins at the cross. How can a proper theological, scriptural, scripturally based Christian faith aid someone with mental illness and a family who deals with the member who has mental illness?
Well, as Lutherans, we are in a wonderful position to do this because we believe in original sin. All men are sinful, and we are not threatened by medicine helping control behavior. People are still sinful, and they need Christ. I fully believe that this is God's third invitation to people on the earth, because throughout history, people with mental illness have sometimes, you know, they've been chained in the most terrible ways in our state hospital right down here on Arsenal. They used to chain them to the walls. Today we have medicine giving these people clarity, and they can now fully understand God's love and care for him through Jesus Christ. So it's just a wonderful opportunity for us to reach out to this population and their families and share the love of Christ with them. They certainly can understand the suffering. There's a lot of suffering in severe mental illness, and there's tremendous hope for me. My prayer is always, come, Lord Jesus, come. Any day would just be fine. And the encouragement to my daughter that the suffering she goes through can be turned around to aid and help other people.
And a family restored, I'm thinking about the holidays that we just celebrated, Thanksgiving and Christmas,
right,
and the other things we celebrate as Christians. To have a daughter back,
right,
for
she
the holidays?
She had us over for Christmas Eve at her home with her husband in front of a fireplace. It's just, I can't tell you how my heart, you know, was filled with joy and sang to God thanksgiving and praise.
Mm. Linda Price is a member of NAMI of Missouri. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Missouri. She joined us to talk about Christians and mental illness this coming Saturday on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in Clayton, starting at 8:30, that's when the registration begins. There's a conference called You Are Not Alone, Changing Attitudes About Mental Illness. For more information about this conference, it begins this Saturday at 8:30 in the morning on the campus of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. For more information about the location exactly on campus, the number to call, area code 314-505-7123, 314-505-7123, or you can get information by sending an email to ce@csl.edu. The conference this Saturday, starting at 8:30, that's Saturday, January the 7th. It's called You Are Not Alone, Changing Attitudes About Mental Illness. It's for educating you and those around you, your family, on the reality, the warning signs, and what it is like to live with and around those who suffer with mental illness. Linda, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Todd.
Remember the conference, and if you want information, that number again, one more time, 314-505-7123, 314-505-7123. The email address, ce@csl.edu. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be back again live tomorrow on Issues, Etc. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.